have a quorum, but we can certainly start. So if you'd like to come up to the microphone. And please identify yourself for the tape and then proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, good afternoon. My name is Terry Carlson. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of the Facilities Division for the Minnesota Department of Corrections.
My name is Bill Montgomery. I'm the Capital Resource Administrator for the Department of Corrections.
The Department of Corrections has four priorities in the Governor's Capital Budget Recommendation, and our total request is for $53,699,000. The Department of Corrections operates 10 facilities, 8 adult facilities and 2 for juveniles. Our adult prison population is about 9,400 and our juvenile population is about 130. Our first request is for asset preservation for $15 million. We use asset preservation for a variety of reasons and ways to protect the investments that we have made in our state facilities. Making repairs to the infrastructure and building envelopes, we address code compliance issues such as OSHA regulations, Department of Health, and fire marshal issues. Asset preservation money also goes towards building enhancements and also that include the improvement of safety and security of our facilities for the staff, the public, and the offenders. And also we use asset preservation money to replace old systems that aren't energy efficient. We have an identified need of $86 million in asset preservation projects within our 10 facilities right now. So this $15 million will be used for our most critical projects that meet the goals listed on this slide. You can see we have a lot of square footage in our building space. We operate 11 sites throughout the state, and many of these buildings are very old and in need of ongoing repairs. For example, our Red Wing and our St. Cloud facilities were built in 1889, and our Stillwater Prison was built in 1914. The Faribault and Moose Lake correctional facilities are converted regional treatment centers that we acquired in the late 80s. These two facilities have been under continual renovation to make those buildings safer for a prison setting. So we use our asset preservation money on projects in all those facilities throughout the state. Here are just a couple of photos that show some walls and exterior buildings in need of some significant improvements and work. Our Moose Lake facility has some tuck pointing needs. Also the St. Cloud wall project is the wall is deteriorating and in need of some critical repairs. The facilities each submit their asset preservation needs to us at central office, and we use a scoring matrix to make decisions on what projects are funded. We prioritize things that address life and safety and security enhancements, and then if there are energy efficiencies to be gained by a project, they also get additional points. Some of the current asset preservation projects that we're working on right now, energy issues, elevator repair, code compliance, air handling unit repairs, well and water system repairs, tuck pointing, pneumatic controls, all of those types of projects. Our next project is for money for the Shakopee perimeter security fence, and I'm going to ask Warden Belts to come and present on that project.
And please identify yourself for the table.
I'm Tracy Belts. I'm the warden at MCF Shakopee. As you can see on the PowerPoint, we are requesting $5.4 million to construct a perimeter fence around Shakopee. Many of you know that we are the only adult female facility in the state of Minnesota. We house all custody level offenders, so it doesn't matter if they're in there for a nonviolent crime or a violent crime, we house them at Shakopee. We have identified the goals, as you can see. We believe very strongly that a fence is in keeping with those goals. On the slide, you can see a photo. That is a concept of what we are looking to build around Shakopee. It's more decorative in nature. You can see that it has wrought iron pillars there, the brick columns. It'd be about 12 feet in height. In the past, some community members have not been overly supportive of the project. We have had several meetings as of late with community and the city council, and kind of talk to them about what the project is about and who we house at the facility, and trying to educate them a little bit on just what Shakopee is. Our design, this concept, depicts what we think is in a good compromise between us and the community members. You can see on this slide the increased risk factors. When we built on the property that we are now located, that was back in 1986, and we had 85 offenders that were there at the time, with a capacity of 132. In 2011, we bumped up to 194 offenders. We are hovering right around 560 today, with a capacity of 643. There have been some changes, obviously, in risk factors. Back in 86, we had 19 women that were housed for murder. To as recent as 2011, there were 79. Also in 86, there were 9 sex offenders. There are now 20 that are residing with us. Since 1995, we have had 7 women escape the prison. What's even more noteworthy is that we've had another 15 that have planned to escape because of our staff being as diligent as they are. Their plans were thwarted and they weren't able to leave. We either, with these individuals, we either house them in segregation or we house them out of state. Currently, we have 6 offenders that are housed on interstate compacts, so they're in another state. What's interesting to note is as recently as January of this year, we have had 3 offenders that were housed in our segregation unit because they had planned to escape and we didn't have enough time to send them out of state. Segregation beds are a commodity in prisons. We need them to deal with those that are violating rules within our system. It's not good to have people down there for lengths of stay that we could easily remedy with a fence around the prison. This is a picture that shows you Shakopee Correctional Facility in regards to its proximity to elementary school, to a church, and there's also a daycare there, and a softball field. When we initially built the initial building, the initial prison was built in 1919, and if you see where it says MCF Shakopee, it was right on that lot, right above those words. In the mid-80s, we built what the beginning of what you see today on the property. By this time, many of the houses, and it's a little hard to see, but there's houses on the right side and the left side of that of our property. Many of the houses were already there. They had come in while we were across the street. In 83, prior to building where we're at now, there was some discussion about putting a fence around the facility. In fact, there was a study in which we found that there was a fence. Now, that didn't happen. We're not exactly sure why that didn't happen. It could have been associated with costs. It's also interesting to note that in 1970s that the city council, Shakopee City Council, passed a resolution for a fence because there were some very high profile, volatile women that were there that had escaped. So they felt a very strong need to have a fence at that time. Again, you know, we've listened to the concerns of the community. We feel that we have been a good neighbor to them, want to continue to be a good neighbor to them. So we feel it's important to address our concerns, yet keep within the feel and the decor of the neighborhood there. We need a secure perimeter. I don't know of any other custody level, that any other facilities anywhere that houses all custody level of offenders that don't have a secure surrounding. Mm-hmm. Also, we wanted to show you some pictures of the school that is across the street. You can see the hedges right now, all that we have that keep people in. The other piece that we want to talk about that's just as important is keeping people out. In the past 5 years, we have 18 documented intrusions on grounds. And these are documented. These are what we know about. And that can be anywhere from kids on grounds to people walking across grounds thinking it's a college campus, and when they're confronted by our staff, they're shocked that they're on prison grounds. What's even more alarming to me is those that are confronted by staff and they flee. So you know that they're probably there, or know that at least they're on prison property. The women that we have housed there have very volatile, violent domestic histories. We have had ex-boyfriends, ex-husbands threaten to harm the women there. It is of vital importance that we have a secure perimeter that not only keeps people in, but keeps people out. I worry a tremendous amount about my staff. They are the ones that have to go up and engage anybody that's not supposed to be on grounds. Who knows what those people are doing? It worries me. One of the things that we did recently is we went to the city council, and they wrote a letter of support for the fence. So, and along with that, with our community meetings, those that have been opposed to the fence in the past have had some side conversations with myself and my staff, and they have noted that they're not maybe still in favor of a fence, but if they want, if we're going to do a fence, the fence that we have as a concept right now, that they would support something like that. So we have been feeling very strongly that this is something that's been needed for many years. We've asked for money to fund a secure perimeter for several years now. We house the most dangerous women offenders in the state. We are respectfully requesting that you fund this incredible need of ours.
Representative Swedzinski.
Mr. Chair, just a general question, just kind of looking at the fence. In general, I think it's $5.4 million is what that particular ask is for. I know there's been some concerns within the city as far as what it looks like. What is the bare bones fence? So what is the chain link topped with razor wire? What would be that basic cost?
Warden.
Yeah, it's about $500 less a linear foot to build your traditional fence that you see around most prisons. And again, you know, we've talked about this. We've had many meetings with the neighbors, and this is one of those things that, from an outside perspective, it's more decorative in nature, but it also meets our needs because we have an interior detection deterrence system within the perimeter. So while it's decorative and that meets the community needs, it also meets our needs. Any good fence has to have four components to it. There's deterrence. There's detection. If somebody actually does go where they're not supposed to go, there's an alarm that goes with that. Then there's delay, which should allow our staff an appropriate amount of time to respond, so that the final part, which is deny, the person that's up to no good isn't allowed to get where they want to go. So we really need those four components of a fence.
Representative Swedzinski.
So, Mr. Chair, you said $500 a linear foot. How many feet are we talking about? What is the cost? I mean,
4,300.
4,300 feet. So, okay. So about we're talking about $2 million difference, approximately.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, which came first, the prison or the school?
Warden.
We were asked that earlier today, too, and I believe that we came first. We've been built essentially on that setting since 1919, and I'm not exactly sure how old the school is, but I would surmise, you know, back then it was kind of cornfield. There wasn't much out there. So I don't want to say that I know for certain, but I'm going to say that I'm pretty confident that we were there first.
That's amazing that they would build a school that close to prison. I see the wisdom in that at all.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, I wasn't going to ask about the school, but it looks to me like the city way back when should have had some zoning ordinances around the prison, so there wouldn't be that infringement, but the horse is out of the barn, it looks like, now if the school is there. It wasn't clear to me, you said that historically, and I've heard about the fence for some time, that the neighborhood had opposition to the fence, and you indicated you had had meetings with the neighborhood and you explained the prison population, but you didn't really indicate whether there had been a true change in the opinion of the neighbors or not as a result of those meetings. If you could share with us what is there consensus now, or what is the situation?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, we've had some very a few very vocal opponents. We had separate dialogue with a couple of people that have been very open and honest with us. One individual had told us that he still doesn't want a fence, but if this is where we're going to go, this is the best option of anything that he has seen. The other came up to me after we had a meeting with the city council, and he talked a little bit about his concerns. He said, you know, I think this is going to happen this time. I'm just concerned that you don't do essentially bait and switch where you put up a traditional fence around the prison. So even those that have been opposed to it in the past seem to feel like they maybe even have a better understanding of who we're housing there or why we want it. And I can't say that they're all wanting it, but I can tell you that of the designs that we have had, this is the one that seems to be the less oppositional for them.
Okay. I have another history question.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I was here when we built a new prison on that site. as the committee members know, I've been here a term or two. Why was that location selected when we built the new prison? I think that was back in the 1980s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And here you would have had the neighborhood there back in the 1980s, and I'm just curious if you know that bit of history. You know, there would have been a lot of open space just outside of the city. Would have still been in the Shakopee area for employees and so on that have probably chosen to live in the community. Do you know why they chose the same site?
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I don't know, but Assistant Commissioner Terry Carlson does.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, that was property that the corrections facility had used previously. There was farmland there that had been used previously by the prison, and so that was just, it was open state land that we used for that facility. And the community was accepting of that.
And
Representative Carlson.
But here we are with a $5 million request, and it would seem to me that, again, there's not much we can do about it, but you would have thought that a better site could have been chosen where you wouldn't have had the issue that we have before us here today.
Mr.
The other question I had, looking at your statistics here, what has changed between, let's see, I guess it was, when was that, where you had 85 prisoners, now we're at 594. You know, our population, 1986. Our population has obviously grown since 1986, but not to that proportion. So is there a different dynamic in terms of the kind of people that are sentenced? We read, at least nationally, about the number of people that are in prison due to drug charges and so on. Is that a big change?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, thanks for bringing up the population change, because that's the other thing that I just wanted to mention. When the facility was built back in the 80s, I started my career at Shakopee as a correctional officer, and when I started there in 83, there were less than 80 women incarcerated. I think there were less than 70 women incarcerated. When the new facility was built, there were 80, and you know, there's a big difference in how staff can manage a facility that's a population of 80 or even a population of 200. I worked there when it was 200 as well, and we knew all of the women very well. You know, we knew what their business was, we knew what was going on with them, because it was a small facility. Because it's grown, the dynamic of that facility has changed so much, and to add another layer of security, add the perimeter fence, really is essential for us at this time. As far as the changes in offenses, certainly there are more inmates incarcerated for violent offenses than there have been. Our women's population has grown faster than the men's population proportionately.
Representative, maybe you misunderstood my question. I was wondering what had changed beyond the, I think when I was first elected, the state was about 4.5 million. Now we're, I think the last census, 5.5 million or something. So we have grown as a state. But what has changed relative to sentencing or types of crimes, or what happened that we grew so much more rapidly with the prison population than the general population of the state?
Ms. Carl.
And I know that we tightened up, Mr. Chairman, the drug crimes. That might account for some of the growth, as I was saying. But what has changed with the state policies or whatever that have caused that?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Carlson. Representative Carlson, there have been many, many sentencing changes throughout the years that have impacted the population, not only of our female facilities, but also of our male facilities. And, you know, having the felony DWI law, that takes into account a population growth, drug offenses, longer sentences for violent offenses, all of those things combined.
Okay. I probably voted for most of those. So.
Yeah,
but,
to the
but I was just curious about what the dynamics were there that it grew so rapidly in 30 years.
Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is for the warden, I guess. Do we contract with other states? Are there other, so our prison has some female prisoners from other states?
Warden.
Thank you. Yes, we do. Those that are out, housed out of state on interstate compact, we do contract with them. We usually, what happens is, we'll do a swap with somebody. Mm-hmm. The problem is that we can't swap a female for a male because we don't, nobody will send them here because we don't have a secure, because we don't have a secure perimeter. So usually if we're sending a female out of state, that means we're getting a male in state that could have bigger issues, more volatile history than what the female does.
Okay. Thank you. One follow-up, somewhat related to that. Without offense, these prisoners that you house, I assume they have some privileges to be outside. Is there a secure area then, or are they, how much freedom do they have, some of the inmates? If any.
Warden.
Mr. Chair and Representative, they are outside all the time. Anytime that the offenders are outside, we have to deploy several staff in key positions to watch their movement. And the only way that they can get from building to building is moving outside. So it starts as early as 6:30 in the morning when they start feeding, and then they've got programming and all sorts of things going on throughout the day. They have to go and get their medications, and so it is absolutely ongoing, the movement that happens from the time they wake up in the morning until the time that they're locked in the evening.
So, Mr. Chair, so
Representative Norris,
they don't ever get to the point where they can just take a walk around the grounds?
I mean,
is it a possibility to get to that trust level?
We have courtyard time, but again, that requires staff time to be out and strategically placed at certain areas so that they can see things. They've got wide range of visibility so that somebody can't quick take off around another building.
Mr. Chair, I was just kind of getting back to the fence again, and you know, how much more freedom to move anyway that would allow the inmates if you had that fence in place.
Warden.
We haven't gotten to the point where we've talked about what kind of programming can happen if we have the fence. But I do think we, as a facility, can be more strategic in how we utilize our staff there. You know, we wouldn't necessarily need to have 5-6 staff outside when they could be doing something else. It's just that's the way we need to manage the population today.
Okay, thanks.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just was wanting to build on the question of Representative Nornes. And I visited the facility, and it's quite an impressive facility, and I think you do a really good job there. And I really would like to see this fence constructed mainly to keep people out. I think that that is a huge, it's very open, and I think that it would be nice if the prisoners could have some exercise time outside. If you could add that into your program, I think would be great. But my question, in conjunction with the question that Representative Nornes asked, was how many of the prisoners that you have there with, of this 594 have committed offenses somewhere other than the state of Minnesota? I'm just trying to find out how many people from other places that have committed offenses elsewhere are we housing there? Because we're reaching capacity almost, and it would seem like in the future we may need a bigger prison if we're in fact bringing in people from outside. So
Warden.
Mr. Chair, Representative, they are all, those that are housed at Minnesota, or excuse me, at Shakopee, are all Minnesota residents. Like we had talked about just a little bit, the when we do these switches with other states, no other state wants to send us one of their women because there is no fence around the prison. So they've committed crimes in our state.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to speak for a minute on probably on behalf of the residents. If you look at this, yes, we note a church and a school and a softball field, but you also see it's right in the heart of a residential area. And as you heard, we newly built in the 80s. My guess is we did it for cost purposes. You hold down the cost by using land you have. And we know why we do those practical things. But if you, and we resisted this fence for quite a few years just because there was some neighborhood opposition. I think they worry probably about resale of their house, mm-hmm. property values, all of that kind of thing. And so it's why I would, now that we are moving in this direction, and I think it is now corrections top priority, do I understand? Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that, in fairness to the residents, that we really stick with this concept of the fence that has been designed in conversation with the neighbors for all of the reasons that we know happen with property owners, and they worry about perception relative to property values and resale. Lends a little more. I mean, it's a sort of a feeling of a not a hostile institution. I mean, it gives a little bit of a friendlier look to the neighborhood, I think. So I'm hoping that we don't move to a different concept that hasn't been negotiated with the neighbors.
Representative Kahn.
I'm sorry, I came in a little late, so maybe this was said. Yeah. What has the problems of escapes been? How many escapes have there been from the facility?
Since 1995, we have had 7 offenders escape. We have had another 15 that had planned to escape, but because our staff are extraordinary, they thwarted their attempts. I explained that we currently have 6 offenders that are housed out of state because they plan to escape or escaped, and we can't contain them where we're at. I also said that in January, as recent as this year, so a month ago, we had 3 offenders that we had to keep down in our segregation unit because they also had planned to escape, and we didn't have enough time to send them out of state.
Continued housing development.
Representative Kahn.
I know there are many ways of escaping from prison, and all of these would have been stopped by a fence. Is that the
warden?
If we had a fence, we're confident that it would give us time to respond if we had the type of fence that we are asking for. Those 4 components of a fence: the deterrence, to detect, the delay, and deny. We need those features in order to be able to respond appropriately.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Warden, question. I came in late, too, and I apologize if this has been addressed. Do the inmates wear ankle bracelets? And
Warden, that's a no.
No.
Warden and Ms. Nelson, or Ms. Carlson, I had some folks in here, I think it was Monday, that either worked at Shakopee or worked in corrections. And we talked about the fence, and I asked them to come back with a little alternative. I know chain link fence, the first reaction is, oh my gosh, it looks terrible. But I just had a paved trail installed across the road from me where I live up near Walker, and it's kind of high to the highway with a steep hill into the road ditch. And they put a chain link fence around the curve, and it's all black with black posts. Obviously, it's only 5 feet high, not 12 feet high, but it looks very good. If you could put something like that in, I mean, obviously, you don't have razor wire. This wrought iron fence is still climbable from either side, especially if you're near the stone pillars. It would be easier to climb. And I did ask them if they could come back with maybe a price that would be using that material instead of stone columns, use 12-inch steel pipe with a paint in black and have a nice crown or a globe on top. And also, I had asked them if they had any inner detection system in place. You said you do, but they said they don't have any inner detection, i.e., movement detectors. Do you have the movement detectors?
Not currently, Mr. Chair. That would be included in this concept.
Well, Warden, I'm actually surprised you don't have them now. I would think you should have light poles all around with sensors on them that if someone moves, even a deer, the light goes off and radio signal goes into the guard shack, if that's what you call it, control room. Do you don't have any video cameras on the site looking at the yard?
Mr. Chair, we do have lights and we do have cameras, but we don't have that audible alert if something goes beyond a certain point of the property. There is limited benefit in that. If we had something like that, all it would do is tell us that something has breached that point. It doesn't go beyond that, so it wouldn't do anything to preclude somebody from leaving the property. It would just alert us that something has triggered that area.
But if you had cameras, you'd see what was out there, correct?
Cameras would help.
Well, I want to wish you a lot of luck. I just wish you'd come back with a little bit less. I mean, if you look at the wrought iron fence, is nice. I know the neighborhood would like that versus anything else, but we don't even have a fence like that around the governor's residence. It's just tough to... Representative Kahn.
Yeah. Well, going back to my fence climbing days, this doesn't look very hard to get over. And no. I wonder, it's terrible, you know, when you grow up in New York City, there are all kinds of things, and you hang around with kids that your parents don't know what you're doing. There are all kinds of things that you did that you shouldn't probably say that you did once you're an adult in a more civilized state. This looks just so 19th century to me. And I just think, for example, like you talked about, you know, can't we use more technology on the ones that you know are likely to escape and things like that? Can't we put ankle bracelets on those? And can't we have some detectors on poles and so forth? And can't we have restrictions that doesn't allow people to get within whatever marks the perimeter, the road, within a certain amount, and then, punishment when people, some kind of further punishment, I would say, by further restriction. I have problems spending this kind of money on what looks like such an old type solution.
Ms. Carlson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn. The barrier is an essential component of perimeter security, and the whole issue of intrusion that Warden Belt spoke about is such a critical factor to the facility operation as well. Also, contraband control. Having a barrier doesn't prohibit someone from throwing something over a fence, but they're much less likely to be able to go up to a specific bush and put something, and then have a communication with the offender at a later time saying, this is where I dropped the drugs. And so having a barrier is such an important part, and we really want to be a good neighbor to our community members, and we need to have a fence that fits that need as well. So I understand the concern. I know it's expensive. The internal microwave detection system will help us with that delay and detection system, so really the whole package is important to us.
And, Mr. Chair, Representative, the other piece that I would add is when we were looking at the women that have escaped, it's very difficult to target a specific population and be able to predict that those are the people that are going to escape our facility. We had one woman that escaped, and she had one day before she was scheduled to be released. So we've looked at those numbers. It's just very, very hard to predict who is going to leave at any given point for whatever reason.
Okay, well, this person who escaped, Mr. Chairman, one day before, you know, you might say something about her intelligence or anything like that. It's hard to believe she was very much of a danger to society if she was about to be released. But, you know, you told us things that you have. You have that you had people that you can't go send out of state because they're likely to escape, and you've also told us that there are people that you keep restrained because they're likely to escape. And I think in segregated unit, you know, why not do something with detections and with ankle bracelets and so forth for those people? You've already, and what of the numbers that escaped, who of them did anything before they were caught? Was there any?
Warden.
Were there any negative consequences of those escapes?
Warden.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not that I'm aware of that they did anything. That's what we're hoping to prevent with a system like this.
Representative Kahn.
And again, over how many years? Over how many years you had these numbers of escapes and nobody did anything, and now this is suddenly needed?
Warden.
Since 1995.
I think we know almost everything we need to know about women's prison. If you could move on to the next phase of your...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to officially call the meeting to order now that we have a quorum. Representative Fabian has read the minutes. Representative Fabian moves the minutes of February 28th, I think. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That's taken care of. Start on phase two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our third project is the St. Cloud Project, and Warden Miles is here to speak about that.
Hi, I'm Eddie Miles. I'm the warden at Minnesota Correctional Facility at St. Cloud. I'm here to talk about a remodel intake, health service, and loading dock request for $29.9 million. St. Cloud is the intake facility for the Department of Corrections. We receive and serve all offenders that are committed to the Department of Corrections. We receive approximately 350 offenders a month. And we have no control over how many that come. We just have to be prepared for when they do come to us. With that, we're looking at remodeling an existing space for our intake unit. We'd like to construct a new health services unit and construct a new loading dock, which would be on the outside of our secure perimeter. And for those of you who've come to visit, I think this project speaks for itself. Our health services unit, right now where it currently is inadequate for the volume of offenders that we serve. We serve approximately 1,000 offenders. Health services was built for approximately 600 offenders at the time. As you can see in this particular picture here in front of you, the officer, our security officer in the area is not in the secure area. That officer has to have accountability for offenders that come in. As you can see looking out of the window that he's looking at, as well as the offenders that are in the health services area behind him. At any given time, if the offenders decide that they want to cause a disturbance, we have no way of controlling that particular area. Now, at some point, what drives me to sleep, have a hard time sleeping at night, is the fact that it would be extremely difficult to contain that area in the event that if we had 5 or 6 or 10 offenders in health services decide to cause a disturbance, it would be difficult for us to go in and contain that particular area. It has extremely bad blind sights, as well as in some areas you can't see at all. The new construction will give us an opportunity to put this officer in a bubble. In the event there's a disturbance, we could then be able to at least contain the area, have someone on site that could see it, so when we try to make an entry into the area, to be somewhat safe for our staff. Intake. Again, for those of you who've come out there, it really speaks for itself. We process approximately 700 offenders in and out of our intake every month. 700 defendants in and out every month. The location size and layout are inadequate, poorly designed, and unsafe for staff. We need space to restrain offenders. There's not enough holding cells. It's poor processing area. We can't separate offenders. We get requests from the court to separate offenders who have testified on other offenders. And so we have to then do a makeshift process for those particular offenders because we don't have the area to separate them. Again, in the event of an emergency, if these offenders who are in there was to cause a disturbance, it would be extremely difficult for us to get in there and to contain that area. The picture that's in front of you is a real picture. As you can see, there's approximately 5 people standing there. There's no area to move. This picture here in front of you, any given day you can have anywhere from 3 to 30 offenders in that particular holding cell. The day that this picture was taken, I believe some of you were out that day, we had almost 68 offenders in our intake area at that time. We had 38 in our intake cell. We had another 30 that was processing out that same day. And they're all in the same small intake area at the same time. Again, this is one that gives me nightmares at night sometimes because our concern is making sure we have the right offenders coming in and make sure we have the right defenders at exit, as well as trying to control contraband and things like that that's come in there, not to mention the safety of our staff. At any given point, if 68 offenders decide to create a disturbance, it would be extremely difficult to deal with it. Loading dock. Currently, all of our trucks are enter the secure perimeter. Right now, we have approximately 1,000 vehicles that come through our truck gate quarterly. Some trucks are too large to fit through the truck gate. And as you can imagine, the truck gate, whenever you come into a prison, you want to open up one gate, let the truck in, you want to close the gate to make sure that the truck is secure. Well, our truck gate is so small, we sometimes have to open up both of our truck gates, which obviously opens it up for some potential problems of the gate. The new construction will eliminate that. It will eliminate the need for public delivery trucks to enter through our secure perimeter. We anticipate reducing 90 to 95% of the traffic through our gate, which instantly enhances our security. As well as we'll be able to search all the product that comes through outside of the secure perimeter with metal detectors as well when we get around to searching.
I have a question. I don't remember. You've probably already told me. The intake, health services, and loading dock, that $29.9 million includes all of that, correct? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, you came close to what I was thinking about, and I was going to ask if these requests for St. Cloud have been prioritized and if they could be phased if need be. And which ones would you like to go first with if they were phased? What would be the most important?
State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, Representative, my name is Bill Montgomery. I'm the Capital Resource Administrator for the Department of Corrections. We did a pre-design study for this project before coming to you for this request. And we have looked at the phasing portion of this project of doing the health services area, and we'd have to add some supporting mechanical building to serve that building, plus do some remodeling on the interior of the prison to get the health services area to function properly. And the amount that it would cost to phase it in two phases would be $16.9 million if we did it in two phases. $16.9 would include the full design of the entire improvements of the facility, but we'd only actually construct the health services improvements on the facility. So that would reduce it a little less than half.
Yeah. Representative Carlson?
I guess then the follow-up would be if that were $16.9, and do you have an estimate of what it would be if you were to complete it at a later date? If I was following you, you would be doing the health services,
but not the
entryway for the trucks.
That is correct.
Mr. Montgomery.
Representative, that is correct. And we did not do a study beyond the point of just this, of establishing what it would take to build just the health services portion of it. There obviously would be some increase in cost if you delayed some of this construction down until the next bonding session.
Yeah, I assume that would probably be, you know, we don't know what the interest rates may or may not be, and there would probably be potentially some other issues, but we have been known, because we'll ultimately have a target that the committee will be working with, or the chair will, and sometimes you've got to fit various projects in, and sometimes you have to phase some to accomplish other priorities, whether it's within your own request overall for the system or other places in the state budget relative to bonding requests.
Mr. Montgomery,
that's helpful that it would be 16.9, Mr. Yeah. Chairman.
Well, Mr. Montgomery, I want to follow up with what Representative Carlson said. If you got the money for everything except the loading dock, what would the loading dock cost?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, I'm not prepared to give you that information at this time, but I can follow up with an email to you to clarify that and give you that information.
That would be good. And then I had a question on a slide that was much earlier. I think, where you have the asset preservation and the St. Cloud wall. Now, if I'm not mistaken, you have a masonry class at St. Cloud still?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
And I'm hoping this picture's from the inside, but if it's not, could that class work with the instructor? And I'm not even thinking of this to save money. I'm just thinking of activity in training for masonry and in giving them something they can look back on and tell their grandkids that, you know, I was bad when I was young, but I actually helped fix something. Would that be a possibility?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not exactly sure if the picture is inside and out. We took several pictures. The walls deteriorate inside and outside, and as you can imagine, we would not allow them to work on the wall on the outside. And normally, we don't allow offenders to get that close to our security, and would be basically telling them how bad the wall really is.
Well, Warden, evidently the criminals are a whole lot smarter than they were when I was young and a juvenile delinquent. Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a question of what your recidivism rate is for offenders.
Who would like to answer that?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I should know that off the top of my head, and I am very sorry that I've just blank on it right now.
Well, Representative Moline, oh, good,
it's
we
for
have
the agency. Yeah, about 36% after 3 years. And that's agency-wide. It's not just for the St. Cloud facility. It's an agency-wide calculation.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, you know, it goes back to the discussion on the other bonding request, too, that it seems like we have a lot more people in jail, and, you know, that's partly due to the fault of the legislature, I guess, because we keep making everything crimes. But if the recidivism rate is 36% and people are constantly in and out of jail and more people in, then, I mean, these bonding requests are going to be never-ending. We're going to have to be putting all kinds of money into these facilities. So I think something that would be helpful for me would be to see the actual recidivism rates for facilities that have bonding requests in, if you could get those to us.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we don't do recidivism studies by facilities because our inmates transfer from facility to facility during their stay. They would start at the St. Cloud facility for their intake process, and then depending on their custody level, the length of their incarceration, their history of violence, they may go to a close custody facility or our maximum custody facility at Oak Park Heights. And then as they're getting closer to release and as their behavior is acceptable, they may go to a medium custody facility and receive specific programming at that facility. So that's the reason that we don't do recidivism studies by facilities. The other thing that I'd like to say is that as an agency, we are very aware of and very committed to finding ways to address offender recidivism. And we really believe that that's one of our primary public safety goals, to help offenders figure out what they need to do while they're incarcerated to change their behavior so that when they get out, they don't come back, and that they live law-abiding lives and are citizens who pay taxes just like the rest of us. So we do have treatment programs within our facilities. We have education programs within our facilities, cognitive behavioral kinds of classes, and work readiness programs, and focus on ways to address those risk factors so that offenders don't come back to prison.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This goes to Representative Moline's question. I think it's a great question, and I'm shocked to hear that you know, you don't have a way to keep the data of a recidivism rate from facility to facility. That's somewhat problematic, and that's concerning to me anyhow, that we don't know. I mean, I know there's a 63% statewide. And for example, Northeast Regional Correction Center up in Saginaw, Minnesota, they have also a bonding project. They have a bonding proposal, and I didn't see it on here. But I know that facility very well because I used to work there, and I spent about the first 6 years of my teaching career in community corrections, both within that facility and then in community corrections. And I know that they boast and proudly boast a 83% positive recidivism rate. So how come that facility reports a recidivism rate of 83%, and then in our larger facilities we don't have that, number one. And I guess my second question, I was going to wait until the end, but Representative Moline, you know, asked a question that made me ask this question. How come their bonding proposal isn't on here? So I think it's a overall project of $1.5 million and a $750,000, I think, bonding proposal.
Representative Carlson, that's a county facility. That's why they don't know what the recidivism is up there. That's a five. Actually, I think it's Representative Moline, five county. Well, Representative Moline, you wanted to.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Ward, thanks for bringing that up. I'm carrying that bill for NERC. It is in my district, and their recidivism rate is at least 10 percentage points better than the state average. And I think that it's important that we know what works to rehabilitate people, and so it is helpful to know on a facility-by-facility basis what those rates are. You know, what they're doing, they're obviously doing something right because their prisoners have a lot less chance of reoffending. So it is good to know that on a facility-by-facility basis, but it is a county correction center, so we do have a bonding request in for them, but it would be separate.
But Representative Moline and members, one of the reasons they're I can't even say the word. What that rate is better is almost all of their sentences up there are for 1 year. Sometimes the judge will be creative to keep someone there for 2 years, but he's very creative in the sentence. But usually if you're sentenced to 1 year at a facility like that, the likelihood that you probably just made a dumb mistake and you're not really the criminal type, you're probably not going to commit a crime. And then maybe if you could do some checking and see if you can come up with a better number for us and bring it to us when you get a chance.
Mr. Chair, I can certainly provide you some additional information about our recidivism rates, and also, you know, to speak more to the programming that we do and our ways that we address risk and assess risk of offenders. The fact that we are state correctional facilities housing those felons who have, many of them have committed crime after crime after crime. We have a different population than the local facilities do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if you'd like to move on to your next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our fourth project is at our Stillwater facility, and Michelle Smith, the warden at that facility, is going to speak to that project.
Hi, my name is Michelle Smith, and I'm the warden at the Stillwater Correctional Facility, and I'm here to talk about the fourth project, which is a well and water treatment project. The request we're making is for $3.391 million for the project. Stillwater operates two wells. The first well was installed in 1914 at the construction of the prison, and does not comply with the Department of Health regulations because it's too close to a sanitary sewer line. The current well is currently our backup well. The second well, which we currently use, was built in 1961 and is our main source of water at the facility. facility. The project includes installing a new well that would become the main water source for the facility and then capping and sealing the 1914 well, installing a system to remove the high iron content and efficiently softening the water, replacing the piping and the closure that is close to failure due to the rust and corrosion construction of the new building for the water treatment. In the next slide, you'll see that this project is urgent and critical to the facility. For over 10 years, the Department of Health has told us that we need to stop using the 1914 well or move the sanitary sewer lines. This year, the Department of Health made a point that we should cap the well and at any time could mandate that to happen. We need two wells to operate adequate water supply for fire suppression and additionally have a backup well in the event that a primary well was to fail. It would be needed for a facility of this size and complexity. The photos show the corroded pipes and that they could fail at any time and are clearly in dire need of replacement. The current water treatment equipment has failed twice in January and now currently is non-functional. When this equipment fails, water pressure is lost, which causes large-scale disruption to the facility, including our power plant, equipment, laundry, food services, other aspects, including the ability for offenders to shower and flush their toilets, which can be a serious security issue in the facility, causing other problems. In addition to any of this, the current equipment is not environmentally or economically efficient. The new system will filter the water first to remove the iron and radon and make it easier to soften and be chemically treated. These processes are needed to be more effective and efficient and was also to have the benefit of improving longevity of the industrial items that we buy, including our boiler system, dishwashers, washers, dryers, etc.
I don't see any questions, so Representative Carlson.
I'll ask one. Why isn't this a HEPA request, Mr. Chairman?
Who wants to jump on that one?
Mr. Chair.
Repair and betterment.
Oh, HEPA.
Asset preservation. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we actually have it on a list for our asset preservation projects. We currently have 40 projects. Actually, we have 100 projects on a list for asset preservation that total up as as our assistant commissioner spoke, $86 million worth of total need. This is actually listed as part of that need. But we feel this need is so urgent that it needs to be a separate request.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that answers the question. Then it would appear apparently in the $86 million if it were not a separate request. I guess say you could ask for $20 million and include it in your priorities of asset preservation, but that's just an accounting question.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, it also adds some square footage to the facility, and I think that's one of the reasons for the asset or for the request separate. There's a small, simple warehouse style building that would be constructed to house the water softening equipment because it's currently co-located with some other equipment and it needs to be moved out of there. So that water filtration and softeners, the transfer pumps and the chemical distribution system and all of that would be in that small warehouse style construction.
How old's the water tower?
Just redid the water tower within the last 3 years. Within the last 3 years.
So that's in good shape. Mm-hmm. Thank you very, very much. We're adjourned.
Thank you so much for your time today.